This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieberg. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Peter, Ortsaftis.
Ortsaftis. What does that mean, Ortsaftis?
Did you enjoy the first Oktoberfest weekend?
Most certainly. I survived. That's the only way to put it. I came back after a couple of hours. It's about a 7 kilometer long. That was yesterday, Sunday. First day was the Ortsaft day, is the Saturday. That's where the mayor of Munich, in an old traditional way, opens the first, what should I call it, of beer, can? No, it's not a can.
No, it's not a can.
Like a ton, right? It's like 150 liters, kind of. A barrel is the word, I guess.
Barrel, yeah.
Yesterday was the parade. It's a parade together with some 10,000 other musicians, other participants.
Did you take part in this as a magician?
I do, yeah. We do. Yeah, we do. The band, the traditional Bavarian band in which I play for 2 years now almost, and I was allowed already to take part last year as well. And it was, but it's devastating. It really is devastating. So when I came home late in the afternoon, actually the neighbor in our garden took a picture of me.
Oh, the Dutch guy with the lederhose.
Yeah, no, but she said, you look like, you know, you're at your very, very utmost. There's nothing left of you. Now, it is, it's tiresome. It's 7 kilometers, I believe, yeah. And we were rather in front this time, which means if there's no barriers, if you're in the end, then it takes, you're waiting for 3-4 hours before you start. And then there's many times people do things and there's obstacles and then you have a pause. But when you're rather in front and everything goes smoothly and then we need a break, right? But then the people are standing there, you know, 10 people thick rows and they want to hear you play music. So then you continue playing until there's, you know, no breeze left in your body. Yeah, here I am. Everything fine. Thanks.
Let's talk about AI, Peter.
Yeah, most certainly.
Do you want to start?
I can. There is a new paper by DeepMind.
Yes.
Thanks to our friend Vlad, Larihev. It's about singularities. We recall, long time ago for me, singularity. That was as per Ray Kurzweil. You know, that was the guy who also, I believe he invented the synthesizer. By the way, I saw his picture again yesterday because I was looking for his name. I always forget his name. And then I thought he looks like the American Beauty and other many great movies guy, which I wasn't sure you were allowed to still look at, Kevin Spacey. But then I saw he was acquitted of all charges. So, you know, I assume it's still okay to look his movies, right? So that was on a side note. So this Ray Kurzweil AI singularity, that's not what we're talking about today. And anyway, I haven't heard the term because since a year, something, everybody starts talking about AGI, right? Which I believe is a replacement for a singularity. And that was a theoretical concept, right, of a future event where artificial intelligence surpasses the human intelligence. Now, quote unquote, paper. For centuries, mathematicians have developed complex equations to describe the fundamentals of physics involved in fluid dynamics. Now, that in itself is very interesting. Now, because I was also not personally, now I did study, I studied many things, but one thing was, if I translated directly out of Dutch, we would call it a road and water building. In English, I think that's what civil engineering is, right? It's what Dutch people do. They build bridges. They build land out of water, right? Polders. That's what that is. So as far as that is concerned, I was involved in.
So CFD was a crucial topic for you.
Well, no, I don't recall. I don't think that I went that deeply, but it was like applying specific high level equations. Let's put it like that. Understanding it at a top level, how fluid, in my case, yes, it was water. Now, they gave another example here, which is about the airflow lifting of an airplane's wing, which in itself is very, very interesting as well. I've thought about many thousands of times. I love to look into the sky and see the airplanes cross over, unless they leave a cloud. And suddenly, you know, towards 10, 11 a.m., the sky is filled with cloud because of airplanes. I don't like that. Now, so what is this all about? So they say experts can now craft scenarios that make the theory go against practice. Basically, there are situations, they say, such as when quantities like velocity, pressure, and the velocity was for me important with as far as the water was concerned, you know, rivers and stuff like that. And then you create situations which become theoretically infinite, and they are called singularities, or they call them blow-ups. Now, I don't want to go further in detail, so I want to have Vlad share with you in a couple of words for him these PINs, I assume we call them as an acronym, physics-informed neural networks. So they embed the physical laws directly into the model, right? So they may be for Vlad, and I can very much understand and be with him, the most promising candidate to bridge engineering and industrial AI. So he sees it.
But that's what Johannes always told us, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Very much the same, I assume. And what am I going to do at some point? I added it at a very late point, but I'm going to be talking to Olga Fink. She's an assistant professor of intelligent maintenance operations at EPFL. That stands for École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. Lausanne.
Oh, very famous.
As we know, Switzerland, a place where many international institutions are, like Genf as well, I believe.
I think Bengio is now in Lausanne, right?
Oh, is he there as well? There you go. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
At the same poly.
Exactly.
At the EPFL.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I need to check with her as well. And I will be asking her these questions. You know, what is the paper we talk about now? How does it relate to, or is everybody moving theoretically into the same direction? I'm looking forward to get a confirmation or to move in a little bit more detail there, not too theoretical, but to just understand what these PINs can do for us. And my understanding was, just as a finish in my words, if I am now going to ask, I'm not sure what to call it anymore. I call it my user interface. Is that then an LLM? Is that whatever we call that? I'm calling it it. I'm calling it the user interface, whatever that is. I'm talking to it typically. And I say, you know, build me, design me, whatever.
And I have an interesting quote because you mentioned user interface there. Christian Heining is a listener and he has an interesting thought on this. And recap, MCP, you already mentioned, and Model Context Protocol. It's an open standard that turns your data and services into a tools and AI can invoke in a controlled way. So, and if an agent can hit your internal APIs, it can research, decide, and execute without pixel changing. And as Kapati puts it, software is shifting to an agentic model, and that means MCP is the new user interface at the end. And I thought, that's really interesting because you already talked about this topic, I think, with Armin. And I hear a lot of people talking about new user interfaces when it comes to agent and AI. A very interesting idea.
Yeah, I'll talk with Armin again a couple of days now, actually. And we're going to continue. Well, he did a thing, I think, with Wire Consulting on agents. And that's where they talked about, you know, we need to move towards, we need to solve certain problems, MCP, but then we look further. And I think it started with Boris bringing up an article from a person who said, you know, MCP is going to fail. And then I think Armin was going to take the other position. We're going to go into the details of that one. Well, for me as a human, and I keep on sharing these, whatever. You know, there was a new BMW here like a week ago. They called it whatever, the Neuer.
The new class.
Yeah. The new class, whatever. And it's, I mean, if you're sitting in a car, now it's going to be autonomous, then your user interface is what? It's your cell phone. It's your smartphone. You do a click, and your autonomous car comes. Then, so And the user interface face for me here is my microphone, I think for you at the moment as well. So I talk or I write, whatever I do, and I believe the receiving it, what I call it, the it is going to be some kind of artificial intelligence. If that's a large language model or whatever that is, I think today it looks like some kind of large language model. And that is going to move on to, as I just heard, most likely I would agree to some kind of MCP, some kind of API, which may then be MCP, all these wonderful acronyms. So, right. And to finish then, thanks for this input here, to finish my thought that I had with the pins is like, you know, here, whatever I talk to you, dear AI, whatever I'm going to call you, design me a new Dutch bike. And if whatever is behind it, through maybe then MCP, has this pin capability inside it, the designs I'm going to see, you know, within a minute or 10, whatever my process is and however detailed I want it, I can then assume and ask for the designs to be designs that actually do function in the human physical world, right? That's my understanding, right? So, because maybe today I can ask it and, oh, look at that. Who would have thought that this could be called a bike and you can do it? And then you start building it. Oh, yeah, well, it cannot. You cannot ride it because for whatever reason, it forgot to deal with Newton. You know,
Newton is quite important. Yeah.
actually it is. Yeah, it's always very nice thought to think that the people on the other side of the world stand almost on top of you 180 degrees.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Good.
What else do you have, Peter? Or can I go on?
Oh, please jump in.
So I have a news from ABB Robotics, and ABB Robotics is investing in Landing AI from your friend Andrew. And yeah, you saw that. It's a strategic investment. The amount is being kept confidential. That's interesting too, I think. And there's a big promise when the ABB guys told me. Through this collaboration, ABB Robotics will reduce robot vision AI training and deployment time by up to 80%. That's the promise. 80%.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it. It's very interesting.
I thought the vision story is coming to an end, but I think it's still there, the vision.
Doesn't look like it, yeah. That was one of the first things that Andrew was doing, right, with his Landing AI. We were very close to him at some point in time, a year ago.
Yeah, because there's a cooperation with Boss Rexroth.
Oh, that was
it. And we were in contact, but that fell through, and maybe we should try again to talk about.
Yeah. We can try again, yeah, to get 5 minutes of Andrew's time. Yeah, he's very, very busy doing many things. Yeah, so the classical industrial robot companies have been very quiet. So the ABB, KUKA, and the Japanese.
Yaskawa.
With all the names, yeah. And I didn't go to Munich here a couple of weeks back, which is, I think, at least in the European level, one of the main gatherings for
Automatica,
for robotics.
Yeah, but right, next week I have a very interesting episode on welding robots, so maybe we can learn a bit more about welding robots. Okay.
Yeah, so you're closer to them, and for whatever reason, when you look for the term robots since a year, it's probably 95% humanoids, right? And we have been talking about that. And there's, let's see.
Exactly.
Now, but then, so this, and interesting, you know, listen to what this announcement is, that get nothing to do with humanoids, right? So if ever we're going to have that chance, we can ask that question. But we've always said, you know, there's, if I'm going to go for automation. And I just saw, again, BMW, so building north of Munich for this, what is it, the new car,
class.
The new design,
new class.
BMW.
Neue Klasse.
So building a new factory, and they're adding, again, they're improving another 25% per vehicle in efficiency. And he says we have already, in certain parts, they have already the lights out factories. They only put them on when they need to do maintenance for humans. Right?
What else do you have?
I had two strategic financial announcements.
Wow.
I forgot the third one.
Something personal or something from the business perspective?
Oh, no, I don't have any. I don't have any. No, no, no. So, they are big ones.
Okay.
Starting with the 1.3 billion, which, how big was the? Oh, no, yeah. So, number one, you said they didn't open it. So, number one was the 1.3 billion ASML in Mistral Series C funding that shall benefit ASML customers through innovative products, solutions, and I think it's seen as a Europe for Europe strategic partnership, right? I don't like too much always this, we Europe and oh, we look too much in ourselves, we should just do things. And this is an example, just do something good, and I think it, in the end it will be good for them. I mentioned last time that I was afraid it was going to be taken over by Apple maybe. And then the second big one, bigger, is the NVIDIA. NVIDIA buying access into Intel x86, $5 billion, which is, yeah, peanuts, right, for NVIDIA. It's 0.something of their worth shares. Intel getting access to NVIDIA GPU technology, I assume, how can it be different, including CUDA? And the deal is being seen as a strategic alliance against AMD. And that was on the day that we aired my interview with Jens Stapelfeld, where in the interview he announces that CUDA was the last 15 years. And I think he was saying, you know, the next 15 years are going to be AMD. Now, the stock market at that very day had a different signal, but let's see what is really going to come out. In the end, it's a lifeline for Intel. I mean, many people who've been following us for many years know that a couple of years back there wasn't a single episode that Peter was not talking about his former Intel, and it's of course very, very sad, but let's see, maybe they're going to really turn it around a little bit, positive sign. At least the stock market was up plus 30%. So that's of course huge. I think because everybody was thinking that they were going to just die, right? Now, in the end, I'm going to close this off with a question, which is, let us know, what for you, dear listener, are you interested at all in what brand of chip, of GPU is inside what you buy? Or for your customer, if you embed, you know, an AMD AI solution or an NVIDIA AI solution or an Intel AI solution, do you or your customer care? And that question comes from a person who almost 10 years worked at introducing, building the Intel Inside brand. And that was mainly for consumers, a little bit of business users as well, but less so in an industrial space.
And when you published your episode, there was an interesting quote by Elon Musk, and he said, AMD is now working pretty well for small and medium-sized models. And I shared this with Jens too, and yeah, you have a famous fan for AMD. So yeah.
Which I don't know in detail, but can we assume that then he is using AMD solutions for his AI factories?
I think so.
But then he's been strongly on NVIDIA as well. Well, everybody has been on NVIDIA so far, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but
okay. We wish all of them success, and you know, in the end, the best one is gonna, you know, is gonna be number one, I guess, right?
And at the end of the emo week, because it was emo in Hanover.
Oh, it was, right.
Yeah, I have a tip for all the guys traveling back. A few weeks ago, we recorded an episode on topic of CNC and AI, thanks to David Priev. He was also there at Hanover at the trade fair show. And I will share the episode link in the show notes.
Very good.
What else do you have, Peter?
Yeah, just a quick one, maybe. You recall Gabriele Mazzini. He was the guy who said...
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. I asked him at the Siemens AI for Purpose Summit in May, that was, for an interview. He was there. And he didn't take it for, for whatever reason, which maybe in the end, it was already clear at the moment that he was not happy. And now there is an official interview, and he's just sad, and he left his job, you know, because the AI Act has grown into a, my word, bureaucratic monster, so to say. So legal people, do not put me words. This is my word. I didn't see the word as such. But he says it has grown into, another word of me, a jungle of articles, preambles, attachments. So it has kind of overblown what he was willing. He was going after with his team because he was the guy given the job by von der Leyen to basically write up this AI Act. And he wanted to build trust. He wanted to minimize risk. And actually, referring to Andrew again, I know that Andrew's always said that, right? Do not try to regulate a technology, especially not one that is developing so quickly. Better, and that's what Gabriela wanted to do. But in the end, you know, all of the different institutions of politics kind of did their own thing, I guess. Extend existing regulation. If there's certain holes that, you know, that you cannot apply this new AI technology, then, you know, fill those holes rather than build this huge thing. He says what we have received now is very business unfriendly. It's technology restricting. Yeah, I think we've heard it all before. I'm not sure if they're going to be doing something about it. In the end, again, very much looking forward to hear from you. I think what he's saying is it's so complex that only legal people.
But he was a part of it, right?
Yeah, he wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote it.
He wrote the base idea, yeah. But he wanted to write something else.
Okay.
And then other people came in and wrote things, and then politicians in the. We have three institutions. We have the commission, and then we have two other institutions.
The parliament.
Parliament, and there's a second one.
And the nation, states.
Third one. Yep. And they by politics, you know, it has grown into this, my word, monster, in which only legal people, lawyers, perfectly okay, you are our listeners as well, and that is important, well, especially if things are very difficult. Now, if that's something that we should go for or not is another topic, because that means that only the big companies, you know, only the big companies who do have lawyers doing these things can then make sure that whatever they want to put into the market is going to be according to, which he says is very, very difficult because it's not that easy. And small companies cannot. So that's a bit of a problem.
But there's always an opportunity for business. And you mentioned the AI Act. It's a good keyword because in the main section now, Sampo from Helsinki is waiting. And some of you may still remember the guys from Mina Learn. They developed the elements of AI course, followed by many other AI courses, and now they have something on the AI Act, which sound exciting to me. And so we have a very interesting episode, and it's great that you mentioned the AI Act because they develop a course to handle the AI Act, and that's very interesting. Yeah,
that's a perfect handover.
Yeah.
It sounds almost as if we discussed it before.
No, we didn't.
No, it just happens every now and then.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. I mean, and of course, I will listen. I will decide if I'm going to do the course or not, depending on how far I want to go into it myself. But then there you go. If you are maybe a small company, a startup, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 10 people, then maybe one of you is going to spend a little bit extra time at night or in daytime to go through the course and then decide, oh, okay. And in the end, again, that was my thing, that we within an industrial environment, you know, and I just talked about BMW as an example here, north of Munich, lights out factories. If there is no humans involved, and that is not what I'm saying we shall be moving towards, but still, all the time, again and again and again, we don't have enough people to do things, the things that we want to do. While in other cases, I must say, had more and more personal discussions with young people who are working specific areas, and they see these huge changes. And I can only tell them that they have to consider, you know, to make a big jump into other areas.
Thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Enjoy your time. You as well, the listener. Have you with us soon again. Bye-bye.
My guest today is Sampo Leino from Mina Learn. Sampo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A few years ago, we recorded an episode about your course elements of AI and the many verticals of this course. Today we are talking about the AI Act and a new approach. But before we do that, Sampo, please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners.
Yes, thanks for having me again. I'm Sampo Leino, the head of learning from MinnaLearn. I've been at MinnaLearn for 3 years, but before that I've had a long career as an entrepreneur, first in marketing and then learning technology. And then I finally got to MinnaLearn. And here I'm working a lot around designing learning and even seeing at companies how is that learning put into effect. So that's my role.
And you're still based in Finland, right?
Yes, we're based in Finland.
Okay, so learning to learn. So, and now we talk about the AI Act. The AI Act is driving the whole industrial sector. What have you done?
What have we done? Well, we started with Article 4. I don't know if you're familiar with that, which basically says that basically your organization should train anyone with AI literacy. We've kind of looked deep into what that AI literacy could mean and what it could be. And we've started to build like a solution around that, something that would be easy for companies to implement. It's really aimed at enterprises. Before, we've worked on like free courses for citizens. Like Elements of AI was a free course that anyone could take, and it's kind of university level. But the challenge there is that it takes like 30 hours to complete. So maybe that's something a bit difficult at work. You can't do that level of study. So I don't know. We've looked at like what would fit, what would really solve it for organizations. And the last 6 months, we've been piloting with different organizations around the world. We like to build our products directly with the customers. So that's been our approach, is even before having the product, we've started to build it with pilot organizations.
The AI Act is a very big topic in the industrial sector. And everybody says, oh, I'm not familiar with the AI Act. Is it a course about learning about the AI Act, or is it a course to learn AI in the enterprise to use?
Yes, that's a good question. Like at first, when you think about like AI Act, what do we do? People think that you have to do a course about AI Act. In fact, of course, maybe legal people and maybe the business owners should know about the AI Act. But really, the requirement for people in the company, they don't need to know particularly about the AI Act. They should know about how to use AI safely. It's how I describe it, or what we've been thinking about at work, is like if you imagine AI being like a machine that you bring into your workshop. And what should everyone know? Like the machine is easy to use. Everyone thinks that, hey, wow, this is super easy. All you have to do is write into it or talk with it. But actually has like safe and unsafe uses. So it's like, how would you use that machine safely? So we're really focusing on like making it really practical and making it so that it's useful. And also AI Act isn't about restricting European companies. It's common sense stuff. So we're really focusing on that. We're like, at the same time, it's the stuff we're building is about policy, and AI Act is complex, and we wanted to cover everything so that you're legally sound too. But on the really bottom of it, it's common sense. Like, how would you get most out of AI? How would you use it safely? How would you guarantee that everyone in your workforce knows the basic literacy so that they can then move on, and maybe then move on to like practical, like exact tools that they use in their work?
So it's really focused on the AI Act.
Well, yeah, the AI Act is the inspiration for it. And you'll know everything you need to basically cover the Article 4. And yeah, that's really been the inspiration. But I think even without the EU AI Act, you should get some AI literacy training. In fact, in our pilot, some of the companies are not from the EU, and they're very excited to do this material. They're using it and rolling it out in their organizations right now, our material.
You already mentioned your elements of AI, and you already published a lot of some verticals of elements of AI for different branches. What differs to the AI Act approach now?
Well, for the AI Act, we've basically modeled this kind of triangle for training. It's hard to, of course, I can't show it to you right now, but if anyone's interested, they can go on our website and download a guide that has the triangle. But the idea is that if you had a triangle of all the workers in your organization and say like 5% are the kind of deciders, the C-level, and 25% is the designers and process and manager people, and then the 70% is the doers. If you think of elements of AI for business that we were doing, that was maybe for like the process designers and managers and the research and innovation people. So how could you design proof of concepts? How could you implement AI into processes? That was for those people. And then this new course we're building, which is Get AI Ready, that's kind of compliance for all. So it's such a short piece of learning that we think that everyone should have that base level literacy, and then they will still move on to doing like very role specific training. So like the innovation and design process people will still have to do longer programs and figure out proof of concepts, and the C-level still has to go to workshops and figure out strategy, and there'll still be need for training for doers. Maybe in a company they're using Copilot or ChatGPT or some specific AI tool in their company, and they'll still need the tool-specific training. But basically, in our interpretation of the AI Act, literacy part is that literacy is like a level beyond that. It's like the why does this work this way? And if I know why it works this way, then I'd have the critical thinking to use anything safely after that. So that's how we think about it. It might be hard to imagine, but if you imagine that triangle, then you'd think like, well, this doesn't cover everything. You'll have to have more advanced things for different parts. And then if you've read it too, there's like critical systems and non-dangerous systems and very role-specific stuff. So you can't cover everything in one short course.
Yeah. Why does the AI Act need a gamification approach? Or am I wrong? Is it not a gamification approach you suggest?
You could call it gamification. Some learning designers cringe when they hear gamification. They think it's like adding badges and rewards, almost like microtransactions or something. But what we think, like you would maybe call gamifications, but we think that for any kind of statement, that you'd be able to prove it in an interaction. So imagine if you were in a laboratory with me and I said, well, if you put these two chemicals together, this happens. And then Robert, you're over there like, oh, well, does it really? And then I let you actually try it. Well, then I think you'll remember better when you actually take the cups and mix the chemicals and see what happens. So what we do is the same, but with AI. So if I say like, well, a large language model is a very sophisticated system that can guess the next word in a sentence. Well, then the next thing, I'd let you try that. I'd like to see what that means. And then if you would try it many times, why does the next word change every time you try it? And that should lead you to think, well, maybe this isn't a fact machine if every answer is different. But it's little things like that allowing a person to first read and observe and then also test the hypothesis themselves really quickly. So we use that kind of loop again and again, and like the results have been really great. Like out of our pilot organizations, the ratings for the material we've produced is like really high. I think it's like 4.5 in it. We're still going through iterations to make it even better. But to hear that for a base level kind of compliancy literacy course that people actually love doing it, that kind of warms my heart. Because it's not like a genre that you immediately think that, oh, I'm going to put you, Robert, in a compliancy AI literacy training and you have to. And you come out and like, wow, I really enjoyed it, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. Can you please share in a few sentences how the course is structured?
Yeah, I can. Let me look it up myself too. I'll get it clearly. So we have about four chapters, well, exactly four chapters. Each one of them only takes about 10 minutes to do. And we've made it quite accessible. So, well, if you have seen elements of AI, it's a lot of reading. So our format is still written text, but in a format that's like Like, I think we pride ourselves with writing science text in a way that it's understandable for everyone. So similar thing, but everything is also available as a voiceover. So that has also gotten lots of positive feedback for learning engagement. But the structure is basically four chapters. The first chapter is about what does it mean being ready for AI at work and how might AI affect me and the world around me? That's been really important for kind of setting the mindsets. A lot of people are not excited about AI. They are scared, anxious, they have fears, and that becomes a blocker for learning. So we've measured in our tests that by doing this first chapter, it can open your mind to want to learn a bit more. But then in chapter two, we dive straight to getting introduced to a chatbot, and we've kind of decided to tackle AI in its most common use case. So there's lots of studies showing that a lot of people at work right now are using large language models. And even if your work doesn't provide it, those people have access to large language models. So even if your company hasn't given you a license to a large language model, it's highly likely that you are using one. And then that also becomes a risk for the company because you can't control if people are or are not using them. In fact, if you do a Google search, you will get the top answer is from a large language model. That's why we've chosen large language models as like the kind of connecting tissue that everyone should know. So all about large language model basics is chapter two. Chapter three is about taking it into practice. So how would you actually prompt if the interface with the large language model isn't queries like Googling? You're not writing coffee in Helsinki is not a good prompt. So how do you construct? Like, what are the ingredients of a good prompt is kind of the premise. We dig into hallucinations, biases, ethical use. And then chapter four is all about your workplace. So how do you use safely at your work? And that is common sense safety, privacy rules, intellectual property. And it's also a chapter where we've designed our product to include every organization's own policies embedded in the learning. So yeah, kind of simple setup. So like kind of putting you into the world in chapter one, chapter two introduces you to large language models, three takes it into practice, and four brings it directly to your work.
How long does it take for the user?
10 minutes per chapter, so like about 40 minutes to do the whole set. It can be even faster, like this kind of tracked from people that do it enjoyingly, slowly.
Okay. Did you work together with customers from different branches, or what was the approach?
Well, the approach was that since we've been doing elements of AI for business, we've got like a wide range of customers around the world like using that. Literally to do the business process design and designing proof of concepts. And from that started this need that we started to hear that people need at work something that doesn't take, you know, 3 weeks learning program, like they need something shorter. So from that, starting to listen to those customer conversations, we kind of naturally landed with six organizations. Some are in Europe, one is in Canada, and they literally just said, we need this. And we started to ask, what is this that you're talking about? And like everything we've built, even these chapters that I described, started from making a survey for all those companies. And even in that survey was, Robert, that same question that like, we asked, like, what parts of the EU AI Act do you need to understand? And those resulted in very low scores. And then the things that resulted very high was literally questions like, how is AI going to change my work? What are hallucinations? What are biases? What really happens when I prompt? Why does it differ from you know, searching from a database? And also, all of our content is based from all those needs that those organizations had. And we're kind of at the stage that now that we've built it together with them, we're starting to roll it out with most of those organizations. And then it'll, of course, become publicly available for everyone too.
Are you going to expand topics, for example, different chapters of the AI?
I think the idea is to expand the product, of course. On our roadmap, I think the first parts will be language accessibility, if I imagine it. It's, we have a long track record of making our content native for each nation. I think Elements of AI is almost like 30 languages. We've started this material in English, which of course isn't the language of Europe everywhere, but it's just something that is quite used in international organizations. But I think the next thing we'll do is expand it with languages. And then the next thing we'll do is that AI is changing so fast that I think there'll be appendices like to like Like, how is AI affecting certain roles and certain, like what is happening in, say, marketing or comms? Or I think the industry part is really important part too. That becomes, you know, like industry specific and then role specific. But it, like, if you think of the solution though, it's like, it's the very beginning level, like what you would do at first. And a lot of companies have the next steps already. So we'll have to see, like, what is something so common that it makes sense that you're not building in-house? You know, like if I had a factory, I would assume that I would have to build some training that's very specifically about my factory floor. Maybe having an external general training for that part. I don't know. We'll have to find out. I think that will be found out with the organizations again.
You already mentioned that it's very, very intuitive and very, very quick to understand. How does the format differ from the from other AI act guides all around the web or, I don't know, consulting companies, etc.?
Well, we've done quite a bit of market research and looked. A lot of the first solutions that we saw literally covered, like, you know, chapter one is what is EU AI Act? And ours differs in that way that we don't cover the EU AI Act. We cover what these people need to learn to use AI safely. So that's one part. I'd probably like to say that because it is a kind of compliance and safety training, I'm almost certain that the kind of storytelling that we use might not be used in other solutions. They seem quite serious and dry. And of course, ours is very serious. I'm not saying it's like all fun and games, but I think our approach to try to make something that is serious, something that is interesting to you. So that's like a huge focus for us. And of course, because we're a product company, we found out when we're going around to customers, a lot of customers are building their own solution. And the challenge for building your own solution, that's like one of our competitors, is that, okay, like, well, you have your own learning department, so you build your own, or you hire like a boutique agency to build one for you. But the challenge there is that because it's not a product, who's going to make sure that it's constantly up to date? And even if you build it internally, like, you're not going to have like a bigger, wider community giving you feedback and like thanks and all this stuff. So that's usually been like the case when we go ask, like, well, what would make like us different than what you're doing is probably the updatability, so that someone is in charge of constantly iterating it. And then the fact that, you know, we spend so much time trying to make it so that it's like actually wantable for the person. So it's like, we know that this is an enforced thing that you have to do. How do you then also make something that you want to do it?
That's interesting, because at the end, you benefit from regulation, right? So from the regulation of the AI Act. How do you feel about that? Because regulation is not the sexiest topic in the world, right?
No, it's not. It's definitely not. I think the benefit there is that there literally becomes a market for something like this. Like, as a startup company, you're always looking for product market fit, right? So when regulation like this comes up, it's almost like, if you remember when GDPR came out and suddenly there was a huge need for like every website would have to have like a cookie system and cookie legal text. And a lot of startups were based on that. So right now we have, I think, CookieBot is very popular, and their whole business is based around this need that came from legislation. So I think there's an opportunity for companies to make something around these kind of legal needs. But then the responsibility also is that it can't just be a cash grab. Like, I think the aim to make a good product, even if these legal requirements didn't exist, I think will like separate the really great solutions and the ones that are just okay. And with us, like, I think the idea that we have organizations that are also not in EU who want to use our product kind of shows that.
You said that companies outside of the EU were also calling for the course. Why? Because they want to make business in the European Union? Or what is the idea?
I think they've realized that AI literacy is a competitive advantage.
Can you explain why?
So, like, I don't know. Like, if you think, like, say if no one in your factory floor ever reads a book, right? Well, they don't need to learn how to read then, right? Because they're never going to read a book. But in fact, it's such an important base level skill that like it'll just build safety anyways if everyone just learns how to read a book. So I think they've realized that even if you never bought AI licenses for your workers officially, AI is everywhere. So, and you can't really, you can imagine that there's like some kind of barrier between work and personal life. So you can't really control a person completely. People will be using AI. And in fact, I think there's like a percentage of about 70% of employees rely on free and public tools. So I think they've just realized that, you know, if we don't do this, we lose. You have to do it. I would like my children to have AI literacy. I would like my parents to have AI literacy. And I definitely would have all of my colleagues to have AI literacy, no matter where in the world they're living. I think it has less to do with like, am I legally bound to do so? I just think that, of course, the same way I would like everyone at work to know how to read.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to your team, when you develop a course like this, what does the team look like? How do you find the right employees and the experts to do that?
That is a really, really excellent question. Well, for experts, we have internal people that work on this. So I've been kind of like the main, I would call it like the way we author is almost like compiling information, not just authoring unique new information. So I've been in charge of compiling all of the information together. We have an AI think tank, which consists of like university experts. And then we, of course, have our customers that have their industry-specific knowledge about what is needed. And then we have, of course, an internal team of like learning designers, writers, illustrators. So it's like a real collaboration. I think a big part is really involving the customers in the building. So even though we're not making a service, we're still building it in a way that the customers are part of making it.
What is on your agenda? Which AI topics do you want to cover in the next, let's say, 6 to 10, 12 months?
I think next interesting things are AI agents. So if we're thinking now of large language models, is something that like I invoke. Like I should realize that I am the driver. I'm responsible when I prompt something. It's not like AI did it and I can blame AI for it. So if I could learn that about large language models. But what happens when you have agentic AI, like when you have AI that you allow to do a tree of decisions independently? What kind of responsibility could there be? What ethics go around that? I think AI and agents is an interesting part.
That's interesting because you mentioned agents. Do you feel like you're always playing catch up? How do you define what's really important at the end? Because we have a lot of discussion when it comes to agent, MCP and protocols and stuff like that. How do you define what's really important and to start a course, to develop a course?
Well, this time we started by asking all the learners what they really want to learn. So I think we will do the same. We will gather a set of topics and then we will send it out to the current users and see what would they need to learn next. And it's possible. I think the questions about AI agents will be in that. It's only because it's been in some conversations right now with the learners that they're curious to learn more about this kind of idea that what could AI do autonomously? But it's almost like people seem to mix up like just digitalization, automation, and AI get very mixed together. And sometimes you don't even need AI, AI for those parts. So I take it with a grain of salt yet. But yeah, the topic discovery realistically comes from the learners and also from like the decision makers at the company, because the decision makers have their own like very specific needs. They could say that we are rolling out tool X next, and we want people to have like, before they do tool specific training, we want them to have like a base level understanding of tool X.
In which topic, in which area do you need to improve your skills, Sampo, at the end?
For me, what I would like to improve next.
So eat your own dog food.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Well, there's already been so much AI stuff that we've done during this production. I'm like, I think I'm really curious to learn more about like, when you produce material using AI as a tool. So in our production pipeline, we have, of course, us people, designers, experts working on it, but we're using AI a lot to produce material. What I would like to learn more about is how the world's copyright system will be changing.
That's a huge topic for you, right?
It's huge because it's like, well, I used to be in advertising industry, and of course, you know, the rights to you know, our thoughts, our imagination, what we produce, like pictures, songs, images, learning content, whatever it is. Like, there's been rules, like, how do you protect that before? And those rules changed back in the day, like when digital stuff came and you were able to copy everything very fast. Now it seems like everything is changing again when you can produce everything very fast. So I'm really curious about how will copyright change? Like, what, like, is it okay for us to train these systems with copyrighted materials? And then how would we, if I generate something, like, who really owns the copyright? Who doesn't? And do any of the old laws even make any sense anymore? That's like really curious to me. And it's like, of course, it's a legal topic, but luckily every now and then I get to spar with lots of legal people from the companies, and I usually ask them about these like IP things. But it's crazy, because like if you imagine how long it takes a team of people to create a new intellectual property, and suddenly maybe one person can have a team of AI systems helping them create an intellectual property. Like, the question is it any less worth because the person used systems and not a team of people? And there's still a director behind it, the person that's saying, I need these kind of pictures, I need this kind of text. So I don't know, that's a really curious topic to me.
AI means in 90%, 95% open source technology. Is your course also open source or freely available, or what is your strategy there?
Well, our course is not open source. And for those that have come from like heard of Elements of AI, which is freely available, this course initially will be offered through your employee. Well, we're basically selling it as a solution for the company, and the company will roll it to their employees. We're also exploring how could individuals do this, because not everyone is in a big 5,000, 10,000, 30,000 employee organization, enterprise. How could smaller companies and even individuals do it? I really want individuals to do it. One of my most important tests while authoring this course has been making my mom take it. And my mom is already retired. And I wanted to see that she doesn't have to use any AI systems anymore. She, of course, knows that those have come. I want to see, can she understand, like, what is the benefit and what is the danger of these systems? Watching her do it was, like, really exciting, because she really got something out of it. So, yeah. But anyways, yeah, like, on the roadmap is how do we expand the use from like enterprise to maybe first, like, SMEs and then individual users. But unfortunately, not open source right now. I could see us, like, open sourcing parts of it.
Let's have at the end a little broader perspective. What is the situation in the US or in Asia? Are there any comparable initiatives there? Or is it a very unique European Union approach?
Well, I'm not a legal expert, so I don't know, like, what...
No, not legal. When it comes to AI courses, when it comes to stuff like how to learn AI, to educate the staff, etc.
Well, it's not uniquely European. It's like AI is one of the fastest developing like technologies at work, and it's transforming the way we do everything. So imagine the way you work. If you're a knowledge work, everything how you've done before, you have to almost unlearn. So if you had a young organization right now that is born in the age of AI, they're basically so competitive because their ways of working and their methods and their culture is already based on the idea that, well, if you have a problem, well, let's first try to see if we can use AI to solve some of it. And for us that have been in the at work for a while, like our initial idea is like, let's put the team together and have some meetings and then hire some like contractors to help us do this. So definitely, I think people should be trained and are getting trained everywhere, not just in Europe because of our laws. It is happening in the US, happening in Asia. It's just because there's such a big shift. Like, the young people will natively know how to do this. Hopefully at school, they will be learning this and they won't be, you know, saying AI is cheating, which would be an awful lesson for kids coming up because they will be using AI every day. But how will we, who haven't been using it every day at first, how will we do it? Almost like if you are around when the internet came, basically my career started just as the internet was taking off.
But are there any competitors in this market? Do you see their competitors?
Definitely.
Okay.
And some of the biggest ones, of course, are the tools companies themselves.
Okay, Google, for example.
Yeah, so Google, OpenAI, like they're building courses constantly, and there's even great free courses. So I think Google has a great free course on large language models, of course, really focusing on Gemini, and you know it's all available there. The other one is, of course, that you can go on YouTube right now and find all this information. That's why I also said us authoring a course is more like curating information. Like anyone could go right now, go on YouTube, go on Google, go on Perplexity, do a search, start finding the information and learn. And most of these systems are super accessible. So if you're interested into making like an AI-driven process, even testing like AI marketing content, just before this podcast, I was testing Google's new AI model, Nano Banana. You can just go into Google's AI Studio and start testing how it works. So like everything is super accessible. You can install these models on pretty basic computer hardware. So if you have some good gaming hardware at home, like I've been running models in my home lab for a long time. Like I think the competition is really that anyone that is already curious to learn, you can go out there and be very hands-on and learn and build and do anything about it. The real aha for me is though that I am a person like that. I like to go around, test everything, try everything, poke my fingers in it. But a lot of people are not. They want the information to be curated into a package for them. So I think all of the information that's in our course could be found from YouTube, online, websites, like other courses. It's not like you can put a lock on information, but it's just that who's going to curate it into something that makes sense for a certain like genre, you know?
Sampo, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. That was very, very interesting. Keep fingers crossed for your courses, for your next plans. And I'm really looking forward to hear more in the next coming month. Thanks a lot and greetings to Finland.
Thank you so much, Robert.